It's so funny. We have the most to talk about, yet no ability to do it. Hello, humans, and welcome to the ASMR edition of Audio Face.
So, I'm Sean.
I'm Dan. This is a podcast about music news and music culture, and let's get the most important thing out of the way. We're talking like this because I am literally in the midst of the worst cold I've had all year.
And then me is, I feel fine. I just lost my voice because I yell at kids for living.
Nevertheless, let me put it like this. You're allowed to live near schools, so it's not that kind of yelling at kids for a living.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not Mr. Maxon.
You're not on a list.
Maxon's on a list. 1000% Maxon's on a fucking list. He better be. Or FBI ain't doing their job. I mean, they never do their job.
But anyways.
This is a special cast about my second...
A brief inquiry into the 1975.
That's a good way to say it, yeah. My second favorite band, the 1975.
Yes.
The group from Manchester. Maddie and the Boys. With Matthew Healy, George Daniel.
Yeah.
Ross McDonald.
Yeah.
All the boys.
Adam Hahn.
And Adam Hahn.
Yep. Yes.
Guitarist who dyed his hair fucking blonde. Okay.
I'm going with it. And so
I know. I kind of fucks with it.
In anticipation of the 1975's next album, The Brief Inquiry into Online Relationships, we're going to be talking a little bit about...
Which comes out Friday. Well, I mean, it actually already got leaked, but, you know, thanks. Thanks, Target. Target fucked up and leaked the album on accident on Black Friday. They put it out, and yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Brilliant. I mean, the same thing happened with their 2016 album. So, but I'm a true fan. I'm like, I'm waiting for the 30.
You're waiting
because my mind is already set for Friday, and like, I don't know. I just feel weird if I try to do it.
No, like, I get that. It's even like it's almost like the natural invocation I have for the Audio Face rule. It's I want to wait until the album comes out.
Yeah. I want the album to pop up on my phone. I just want my screen to have the album cover.
I keep skipping through those notifications that Spotify always sends, because I always open Spotify very frantically, because I'm just like, play music, and I always like accidentally dismiss the, this new album came out thing, and it's, this literally matters least to me of all people on the planet, because like, I keep up with newest music news and shit, so I know what's coming out way earlier than Spotify does, but it's still kind of annoying. I would love to have that kind of feeling. Anyways, how did the 1975 form?
Well, they formed at school. Basically, they got big in 2013, really, but they've been around since they were kids, like they're teenagers. When I think Ross and, it was George and Maddie, they're best friends, and they were flatmates for a long time. They formed the band where they were in, they all went to the same school and they kind of relatively knew each other, and then they formed their band that way.
About what age are they all roughly? Because I think they're like teenagers.
They're teenagers, like 14, 15 or so. So, and then Maddie's 29. So they're all, they've been around for a long time, making music for a long time together. So even before they were called the 1975, they went through other different names and stuff throughout them and had demos and other things and played shows all over the place before the release of their first album, self-titled album, 1975, in 2013. And that's really what got them relatively known, because they started to do different shows and stuff while they were recording their album and everything. But they've been playing music forever.
Yeah, they had a couple different names. And You Versus Them.
Yep.
Forever Drawing Six. House.
The Big Sleep.
Big Sleep. Drive Like I Do.
Drive Like I Do,
they
yeah.
They settled on the 1975 because...
As a poem.
They found a poetry book that stated 1st of June, the 1975.
Yeah, that's what Maddie found one in the attic. And yeah, so that's a big important thing to a bunch of fans in the band, is the 1st of June, the 1975. So that's what the 1st of June was. This year, they just announced their Music for Cars, which Music for Cars was an EP that they released before their first album. But this is like a big... Okay, this is the new era, because the 1975 goes through eras.
Similar to Gorillaz Faces.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty similar. So they had like the Black Album era, which is the first album where they were always wearing black and black clothing, black and white. Their music videos are like that. It's kind of an era feel. And then their second album, I Like It When You Sleep For You, so beautiful yet so unaware of it. Really weird title. In 2016, the album was Pink. So a complete total 180 contrast to what they did. But that era was, okay, more lively stuff, a bit more color in their music videos and their shows, more color, big pink, big rectangles. So that's what they're formed on. And now this one, Music for Cars, is two albums. So they've seen a brief inquiry into online relationships for this Friday, the 30th of November. Yeah, at the time of recording, so 30th of November. And then next year, in about May, they're releasing a second album called Notes on a Conditional Form. So, because Maddie said he didn't want to make double albums because he says that they're terrible for fans. Take hints, Drake and Migos.
Take
and the
hints
rest,
most of Trap.
All of Trap. Maddie's so woke. He really is.
And so, like, just to really kind of pin down, what does the 1975 sound like if you're trying to describe it to someone who has not heard that much before? I was kind of going through their back catalog in anticipation up to this, and I would say they're pop alternative, a little bit experimental, especially more on the second album.
Definitely the second album.
And
then all their singles and stuff.
Yeah, just like
year.
Pop alternative, which is weird because that's like that's a very interesting place in my musical heart. That's where Gorillaz lives, in pop alternative. That's a very like nice place for me. And there's a little, just when you want to say the 1975 sounds very similar to a certain band, and there are a couple that I can name, you go, but not quite, because they do.
They have their own sound.
Yeah, they do have
their
own sort of mix.
Yeah, their first album, The 1975, is more true alternative rock, as I like to call it, where it's, okay, this is what alternative sounds like. We have songs like Settle Down, Heart Out, Sex, Robbers, and those songs are really big into, okay, this is what true alternative sounds like. Which there's kind of a big gap with alternative music right now, where you have a bunch of like indie folk and other shit getting in, more pop getting into it.
Yeah,
but that album,
the alternative genre has always been kind of broad.
We've talked about that plenty of times on Audio Face, and
subscribe if you're not already.
Please do. I hope I get hella fan 1975 fans to listen to this, because I love the community.
Our recap episodes are very popular with people.
I know all the hashtags for these humans. I'm so down. Anyway, because I'm going to a listening party at Fingerprints at 4 p.m. on Friday, because I'm going balls in, because I want to know what fans listen to.
Holy
shit. I'm going in, be like,
you're going so hard in the paint.
I'm going so hard in the paint.
You might have to do some interviews, so like Audio Face bonus.
I'm literally low key to do that. Like, I told Justin he's gonna come with me. I'm like, I want to like ask people, and I'm gonna take notes and stuff. Like, actually for the podcast.
Yeah, no, we'll talk about this a little bit later air. But this is gonna be a very interesting thing for you to do.
Because I want to hear what fans' opinions are on it.
Because we're the podcast of the people. So if you've wanted to ever assassinate Sean Suarez, you'll be able to do so at Fingerprints at Long Beach this Friday. What'd you say?
4 p.m.
Yeah, his face is on the album cover. Shoot straight, in the words of Maxine Waters.
Waters.
I almost called her Barbara Lee because they all look the same. Anyways.
Except the ones on the left is.
Just. Syndicate 23 political report.
Oh God!
It was a disaster.
Yeah, that was a disaster. We'll talk about that later.
If you know,
Sunday.
You know.
If you know. Yeah. Anyways, so their sound, the Pink album was a big.
The second one.
Yeah.
Which, let's get this out of the way. The second album is called "I Like It When You Sleep For You Are So Beautiful Yet So Unaware of It." It's a very long title.
It's a poem that Maddie wrote. Like a thing that he was writing, and that's what it is. So the fans call it Black Album, Pink Album,
And I'm gonna do that too, because I don't want to sound like a creep.
Honestly, do that. So the Pink Album, they contrasted their sound a bit more poppy, more energetic, high pitched stuff, and a lot more electronic. I mean, so the 1975, the deluxe version of their album, the first album, the second half of the deluxe version, which has a lot of B-sides, you can hear the experimental stuff. So you have like intro/set 3, you have Antichrist, you have Me, you have songs along those lines. A No Brain, Face Down, which they actually put that song into Lost My Head. But anyways, so those are more experimental, and you can hear, okay, they're tinkering with electronics, trying to do different sounds, which for me personally, you know, if you've been a listener of Audio Vase, my favorite genre is experimental alternative rock. I love that shit. That's why, yeah, I love Radiohead. That's why I love Björk, you know, and so on and so on. And that's why I love the 1975, because every time I'm listening to them, I go, boom, this is like my favorite genre. I really like it and everything. So anyways, they, wow, we tied the game.
That's amazing.
Going on, did Sidney Crosby score? Crosby scored a hat trick. Like, I am a Roman god right now. Sorry to, like, all 1975 fans. I'm a giant hockey fan, so.
Yeah, we happen to be recording this during a hockey game. So, sorry about that random jump in thought, but continue your train of thought, Sean.
Yeah, so the Pink Album went way more experimental. So you had songs like self-titled, song, I Like It When You Sleep For You're So Beautiful, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That's basically, like, half house music into the song. Sounds like Loving Someone, which is a big pop electronic hit. Oh my god, that song is amazing. He has a line of, I'm the Greek economy of cashing intellectual checks. And then you have like Somebody Else, which everybody knows that song.
That's the sound, my, I really,
the sound, my favorite 1975 song. Song. I love the sound. I love Love Me, the opening track of the album. And then my favorite on that album is Lost My Head, personally. Mm. Super simple song, but beautifully written, and it's amazing. It's a really good song, simple, right before all of the things into it, and that flows. That's the big thing I love with the 1975. They're very thoughtful of when to make music, because they wrote the sound during the Black Album era, but Maddie said, I don't want to be a boy band. I don't want to sound like a boy band, so I don't know when to really make the sound and put it into an album where we don't sound like a boy band. So they put off on it until the Pink Album and said, okay, you know what? I want to make music I want to make. I don't want to have the pressures of having what people think we sound like, what we should sound like. I want to do what we want to do.
And
then the sound comes in, perfect time to put it in. Beautiful.
And that thoughtfulness has kind of been with the band since the beginning, or at least the beginning of them calling themselves the 1975.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because exactly. When they released their EP, the idea behind that, at least from what I've read, is that they wanted to be able to kind of showcase all the different sounds they were working with,
mm-hmm.
so that they wouldn't have to be pinned down to one sort of thing on the album. So it's like to whet your appetite, to show that you're going to be experiencing a couple different influences from different genres, yeah, that usually exactly. don't go perfectly together, or sometimes they do, right? Because I'm saying like pop alternative is an established thing.
Yeah.
The 1975 definitely takes similar motifs from other different musical outfits that exist, right? But they do it in their own way, and in a way that's very unique, and not it's definitely not something you'd usually find on the shelf of your typical pop album. It's got and so
it's
much more depth.
Definitely not pop.
It's got so not, much more depth than that.
So
it's
so good.
Like, that kind of thoughtfulness for how the music consumer actually understands these albums and listens to it and consumes it is the kind of thing that we really search for when reviewing albums, particularly because there is an art to constructing mm-hmm. an album from start to finish, and to actually be thoughtful about the songs rather than just putting a bunch of songs on the album because these are the collection of songs you made in this 6-month period of time. Thinking about how the songs go together, how they flow in and out of each other, like you were saying. If I could get, for a moment, I characterize the two 1975 albums a little bit differently. I characterize the first one, again, the Gorillaz comparison is very apt here, but I compare the Black Album very much to Gorillaz' self-titled album, the first one,
mm-hmm.
because both felt that I could hear for both their albums that they're very special from the beginning.
Yes.
But a lot of times, because they were so new, it felt disjointed. A lot of the sounds felt a little bit like they were there and they're really good, but they're like a little bit out of place so much, or hadn't fully found where they were going. I found particularly, I wouldn't call it filler songs, but there were some songs that were just turned up the like pop and almost boy bandishness to 11 or 12 on that album. And
you can
definitely find it more on the Pink Album.
You can definitely say that with like songs like Hard Out or Settle Down, which they don't really play in shows, but then you have their staples like robbers, sex, you know.
Money.
Money. Oh my God, money's such a good song. Chocolate. Those songs, okay, yeah. They're big. Even though I don't like chocolate that much because it's too upbeat for me. I like depressing shit. Like me on that, on the bonus out part of the album is amazing. So all of the singles they've released so far, I will talk obviously all about them on Sunday. That I've been yelling about all year is Love If You've Made It. Literally, when I heard that song the first time I heard that, I go, they literally might be as good as Radiohead. This is scary. Because that song is everything I like about music. And that never happens. Because if you're listening to Audioface, I am extremely picky for multitudes of reasons.
Oh, part of the reason people listen to this podcast is because they love to see how you tear albums into assholes.
Yeah, exactly. And when I heard that song the first time, I literally just go, okay, new 1975 song, because give yourself a try. I have to be in a mood to listen to it, which is their first single. Didn't really like it. Still iffy, even though it's based on a Joy Division song. I fucking love Joy Division. I go, I have to be in a mood to listen to that. And then they put out Love If You Made It. First listen through, I'm like, oh my God. I'm going to be listening to this song all year. Whenever I have nothing to listen to, put Love If You Made It on, I'll put it on repeat. Literally. Everything about that song is amazing because obviously we're big political junkies. That's his career. I dabble in it. And everything about it, the production of the song, the vocals, the lyrics.
And if I could
everything.
Really fast just take a tangent on the fact that Matty Healy is a very underrated lyricist.
Oh my God.
Is the right word. Because
all of his songs have meaning to them.
So they have meaning in a way that it's really. It's not difficult to make a song that has meaning with it, but to express that in a way that it is poetic in the sense where it's using metaphor and talking in a way that's direct but discreet.
Yeah.
And it's a certain talent that I think David Albarn has when he's not performing live, but when he's making lyrics, actually working on that. Tom York has, where you can listen to it and it feels cryptic. Yes. And then you can listen to it and it feels like a typical song about interpersonal relationships, like much of music is.
Yeah.
Or you could listen to it as a political or socio-commentary kind of thing.
Think of it like Lotus Flower, like that song, the lyrics in it of how discreet Kicking Your Limbs from Radiohead, how discreet the lyrics are. That's what this feels like. And a lot of their singles they've been releasing so far have sounded like that. And I know Matty said that he wanted this album to be their OK Computer. I go, holy shit,
he really said those little words, OK Computer.
He wants it to be that, to be that defining of their band. To be, hey, this is we figured out what we want to be, what sounds we want. We've been touring for years. We've been together for 14 years. We know what we want to make and what we're capable of making. And all their singles so far have sounded like, okay, you're still maturing your sound, and this album is going to sound different than the last two, and I'm very excited for it. So because I mean that track, Love If You Made It's amazing. Two Times Good, Give Yourself a Try is iffy for me, but I mean I haven't been in the mood for it to listen.
I've heard Give Yourself a Try because you famously lawyered me at the Audioface Song of the Summer Awards.
Oh, for
I listened to Love If We Made It, and Love If We Made It stuck on me. There's two things I hate in this world. One, Ben Shapiro. Two, admitting Sean is right. And believe me, it pains me with every fiber of my being, but Love It If We Made It sort of crept up on me, where the pre-chorus thing, where it's kind of building up, and I can't describe, I don't have the lyrics to the top of my head, but I can describe the part of the song. Right before you get to the thank you Kanye very cool part, like a little bit before that,
degradation, masturbation.
So that little pre-hook had been
feeling, masturbation, immigration, liberal kitsch, kneeling on the pitch.
Yeah, so
all of those.
So that was in my head a little bit, and it's, you know, the interesting thing with Love If We Made It is that it's a time capsule of the moment. It's a very zeitgeisty song, which is what Song of the Summer was about.
Mm-hmm.
But even that beat, I was kind of really enjoying. And then I kind of slowly started to get into it. And it has enough of a tempo beat to where I can kind of feel active to it, which is like, yeah, and
it's catchy.
It's very catchy.
And it's amazing.
Earworm is the right word.
Bass line from Ross in that song.
And
oh,
if you take, and we're kind of like pouring across the track and thinking about all the different meanings and definitely look at the lyrics. It's full of
watch the music
references
video,
and ideas. Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Watch the music video.
Zoo TV from U2 in the '90s. Like, man, they're onto stuff.
But
they're,
the best thing about it is that, like a lot of really good music, you could also look at the song from a purely pop song standpoint and go, wow, it's catchy. It's got like the emotion of the singing. It's got a lot of good instrumentation. It's kind of playing along the psychedelic-ish motif that a lot of music is starting to play along against now.
I mean, you could even do it with It's Not Living If It's Not With You, which is their last single that they did, which is about Manny's addiction to heroin and him going and dabbling into that. The same thing on that song where it's like, oh, this is like an 80s almost funk thing, and you're going into that.
Which they dabbled a little bit with as well on Pink Album.
Yeah, they started to just nitpick a little bit.
Yeah, it's time to hear that.
When I heard that, I'm like, let's get into that. But I mean, we'll talk about that more on Sunday, because Sunday, I'm going to talk like half an hour on that album. I'm going to just dissect that thing at least.
Yeah.
So
that's going to be a fun episode.
Yeah, I mean, I cannot recommend the 1975 enough. I mean, they have definitely been slept on by some people. I mean, they get a rack from some of their fans, which I understand. I mean, honestly, their fan base is awesome. I love them. I love the community. They can be distorted in the wrong way by people, by just the perception of them saying, oh, it's all just a boy band. It's not like that. The fans have extremely passionate, very, very serious fans.
It's not just like a bunch of people who are
not, it's not like 5 Seconds of Summer or bullshit like that. They're
perfectly fine 5 Seconds of Summer fans, but they
there are more.
This is a stereotype of certain types of fans that are more just into the, oh, I want them to sign a part of my body, as opposed to like understanding the music. It's less groupy
it's more they genuinely like their music because it resonates in them. They go, hey, I'm going through this in my life. And like Maddie was saying, that he was receiving fan letters that he was sometimes like, this is so overwhelmingly deep, because some of the people were saying, hey, I listened to this song when my mom died and stuff like this, and it got me through it. Or like one of the times, I think somebody had a poster at one of the shows in 2014 saying like, this city was played when my mom died, or something like that. And Maddie went up to the fan and gave him a hug. Like, they're, the 1975 themselves are so great at fan interactions. So good at, they stop everybody. They takes pictures with them. He talks with the chats with them, gives them hugs and tells them, hey, like, what's going on in this in your life? And they're very good at that, which is rare for bands, especially on their nature of how big their fan base is and how intense it is.
Yeah,
it's good to see that from them. So I mean, I can't tout them enough. I really like them. When I first heard them, I didn't like it much, but I guess the first song I heard from was Chocolate, and I go, it's iffy. And then the second song is In the City, and I'm in.
The boy bandy comparisons are extremely understandable to me, because I have to be in a certain mood to listen to 1975 a lot, and like, you can very much,
newer stuff you'll like a lot more.
No,
like,
no,
old stuff for sure. I understand that.
Definitely with a lot within the first album, a lot less within the second album, but still there. The third, I've only listened to the 2 singles, so we'll see. But I can
you haven't
see.
Listened to the other single. Yeah, I'm waiting for you.
I can see where people could get that, but like,
can't wait.
You really only get that from first impressions. You see them together. It's like, oh, it's a boy band. You hear it's poppy, and like, maybe the songs follow that kind of very simple pop motif. It's like, oh, they're a boy band, but there's so much more to dig into. There's way more. Don't judge an album purely by its cover. And we will be reviewing the 1975's brief inquiry into online relationships on Sunday, where we hopefully have our voices back.
Yes, definitely.
We'll also be reviewing some other albums that are on the docket, I know for sure. And of course, because in a couple weeks from now, we'll be doing the Audioface Court Pack episode. Please send us any albums that you think we should mention on the Autoface Awards, or at least deserve some type of honorable mention for the year, because that will be one of the last episode opportunities we'll have to make it qualify.
Yeah, definitely. There's a couple albums I need to review too that I totally forgot about. So we'll do that.
Subscribe.
Literally everything for us at Audio Face Pod
on Twitter and Instagram. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, whatever you're
Spotify,
listening. Spotify. You could literally listen to us on Spotify along with your music. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I also recommend is listen to the album twice, because songs from the 1975 definitely sound a lot more refined on the second try, because their singles and stuff, for me, took a couple listens for me to get into them.
Yeah, I think that's a good advice to music in general.
In general, definitely.
Rarely do we not listen to albums two, at least, like, three times before we, like, really review it.
Yeah.
It has to be either, like, really bad. Like, usually has to be really bad for us to listen to it less than that. But anyways.
Yeah, definitely. But, all right.
Thank both of us. Usually I have to thank you because, like, you're doing something inconvenient to swell for podcast. But no, we suffered a lot.
Ah, it's fine.
And you got to talk about something.
I love to talk about the 1975. I could talk about them for hours. I mean, that's what's going to happen Sunday. Yeah. I'm going in hard. I've been waiting for this album all year. So,
this is why I like doing this podcast, because we can talk about music and it's fun this way. Yeah. So, with that said, I am going to rest my voice and succumb to the sweet
NyQuil.
Release of NyQuil.
I can say it because I'm not sick. I just need to stop fucking talking because it hurts.
Sean, you can also be found on Twitter and Instagram at SW Suarez.
Yes.
I can be found on Twitter at Dan from the Web and Instagram at Dan from the Internet. And yeah, do all the things. Yep. We'll see you on Sunday. Cheers.
Cheers.
Let's get right to it. I will be dead.
You dying ass?
Yeah, I can. I'll at least know what to say to, like, get this going.
Ooh, what you say? Oh, I can't see.
That's how they fit. What? Yeah, no.